Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the David Griggs Show. We're finally going to have a good show. Finally. I'm joined by... It doesn't really matter. There's some other people here, but this is the David Griggs Show, and we're going to get started right away. Here we are. Our first topic, guys, is this man right here, Tim Miles. What? Anyway, he started off at North Dakota State when they were a Division II team, was with them through the transitional process, built them into one of the better programs in the Summit. They made a tournament their first year they were eligible. He wasn't coaching there anymore, but it was because of the work he did. He went to Colorado State, turned them around, and now he's at Nebraska. And they're off to a little bit of a slow start, but they're on pace, I think, to finish strong and make the NCAA tournament. Guys, what do you think of this?
Oh, Chad, please, what did you do?
Oh, I lost a bet. I lost a bet. I told him Oregon would win yesterday. And Colorado won the game. He gets to host tonight. Oh.
And, I mean, we're going to get to how good Colorado is and how bad Oregon is later in the show. But, anyway, moving on to our next topic here. This is another important issue that I think is, and that's, let me get it up here. Kansas and Missouri, the border war. It needs to come back. It's been dormant. One of the best rivalries dating back to at least the 1890s in football, 1907 in basketball.
How are we supposed to be discussing relevant issues, you know, things that just happened
this is the David Griggs Show. I don't understand how this rivalry isn't relevant. Why wouldn't it be?
HD report. I thought we were discussing teams and conferences and... Go ahead. Go ahead. Do your thing.
The border. Guys, your thoughts on this game? Not everybody at once.
He just can't host, can he?
Well, come on. All right. Let's go back to let's go to our next topic, and that is once again going to be this man right here, Tim Miles. Anyway, again, you know, Tim Miles, he was the coach at...
I can't... David, you already discussed this.
The coach...
No. How do we do this? Where's the mute button? I think I got him. All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Hoops HD Report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We've had enough of the David Griggs Show. He's off the air. He's gone. Joining me tonight... in addition to the muted David Griggs, Joby Fortson is back with us again. Joby, how are you tonight?
Doing well.
And also,
what has been a rough couple of weeks in Charlottesville.
Also, John Salico with us again. John, how are you out there in Xavier territory?
I'm doing quite well here. I think David Griggs is trying to tell me on his screen that I'm number one.
Yeah, I'm trying to get that video image off as well. There we go. You're number one. Okay. We're maybe going to give David a chance to talk here. We'll see how things go tonight. But after that, you know, I think it's the last time we ever give him a chance to host anything ever. And I now know why we don't let puppets host. But let's go right into the topics here. We want to start with a little bit of news and notes. And actually, a couple of suspensions that came out of games over the past week. First of all, Friday night, it's a bit of an under-the-radar game, but Monmouth was at Iona. At the end of the game, Washington for Iona pretty much sucker-punched a Monmouth player in a really nasty incident after the game. Did you get a chance to see that game, Joby? Or?
I only saw the highlights, but it's pretty amazing. You know, I don't know fully what created, but when I look at this game, what the big takeaway is, wow, Monmouth's really good. The fact of the matter is, these guys the sucker punch is one thing, but these guys should be, and you guys mention it every Thursday on your Under the Radar show, but oh my goodness, they are a tournament-worthy team because we're about to talk about one of the reasons why in a second half.
Saw the second half of that game, Chad, and that was certainly one of the better halves of offensive display you'll see on both sides. Now, I guess what the pundits didn't say during the second half of that game, Monmouth's player had committed a flagrant one and had also gotten a technical, but I still fail to see how that warrants being slapped in the post-game handshake line.
Well, exactly. He did get a two-game suspension as a result of the slap. You know, Monmouth won the game 110-102. David, let's give you a shot here. Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I want my show back, but since could Iona possibly have looked any more ridiculous from Tim Kluse? And I didn't know, like, if that was tongue-in-cheek, what he did tweeting that out before the game. But, I mean, you just don't comment. If you're a coach, I think it's bad form to comment on another team anything that isn't yours or anybody else's business. So that looked ridiculous.
Yeah, it was his tweet. Can you tell us what his tweet was?
Basically, I don't remember the exact verbiage of it, but it was attacking the Monmouth bench and saying that they weren't really players. You know, I don't see them on the court. What are they, cheerleaders? And it's like, what's it to you? Who they are or what they're doing, they're not your team, they're not your players. Why are you even commenting on that? Now, if it was meant to be good-natured ribbing, that's one thing, but I actually think he meant it as an attack. And how ridiculous does Iona look? Monmouth's bench absolutely destroyed the Iona bench. They lose the game. I realize it's physical. I realize that these two got into it for a little bit of a spat last year. The thing about what happened at the end, had the two guys gotten into a fight, I think that that's actually less serious than basically slapping or punching a guy that has his hands in the air. When you raise your arms up into the air in that situation, I don't have any arms, but you're essentially communicating to everyone that you have no intention of fighting. So it isn't that he slapped a guy. He slapped a guy that was basically giving up, saying, no, I don't want to fight. I think that that should be even a bigger suspension, personally, than had the two gotten into it. But, you know, that's what happened on the court. On paper, it is a really, I think, big win for Monmouth just because of how tough Iona is at home.
Yeah, and Monmouth had no letdown today. They went out and blasted Siena at home, who may be the third best team in that conference. But talking about suspensions, one of the things that really stood out to me was hitting another player in the face, causing a bloody nose, two-game suspension. Jarmal Reed for Oregon State, tripping a referee, no injury, but it was a trip of an official, a four-game suspension, although the four-game suspension came from his head coach, not from any governing body. But, John, did you get a chance to see that game last night, and did you get a chance to see the trip by Reed?
Yeah, once again, I was flipping back between the Virginia and Florida State game along with Oregon State and Utah. That was a game that Oregon State was in pretty much complete control for most of the game, but they were up by, I think it was 4 points with about 4 minutes to go in the second half. There was a trip that wasn't called, so Oregon State's player, for whatever reason, just had a complete brain cramp, decides to return the favor, thinking nobody's going to notice.
And it was right after he made a great defensive play, got a steal, didn't travel miraculously on the play, got the ball to his teammate, and then getting up, trips the referee. And Oregon State scored one more point the rest of the game, and it was on a free throw.
I thought we had issues last week when, the Bengals had imploded against the Steelers.
God. I almost don't know what to make of that. I mean, how absurdly ridiculous is that? He just tripped the referee.
I'm glad Wayne Tinkle came down hard and fast, gave him it's officially at least a four-game suspension. It could be longer if they determine that.
And, you know, the thing is, it's why we have in society different rules against police officers than getting in a bar brawl with some guy you get in a sports argument. You know, all of a sudden you're punching a cop versus punching some regular patron. One could easily lead to jail time, extended jail time. The other's, you know, typical time in the drunk tank that Mr. Griggs knows all about. But, we have different rules for a reason. You don't touch officials. And I actually think I'm very happy that at least the coach realized, hey, that's a line you just can't be crossed. Even if it was – and people have seen the highlights. Even if it seemed like a silly-ish trip, you cannot do that.
Yeah, I mean, there is like this clownish thing to it. I mean, it was silly. but that's not to say that it wasn't serious at the same time. I don't know how you can. I have a hard time not laughing at something so bizarre. But four games is not too. It's not too short. I'll put it that way. You can't touch an official, and I wouldn't care. It's getting to a point now. It has. You're not seeing it in basketball, at least not college basketball or college football as much. But the way officials are treated at in soccer matches, at the high school level, even at the peewee level, I almost think that if you want to take a hard stand, if you strike an official or touch an official, you might be done for the year. Like
yeah, we saw a much more serious situation in Texas in the high school ranks with an official during high school football season. That was far more scary because that was premeditated. This was just one of those spur of the moment things, but still pretty stupid at the same time.
Yeah, incredibly stupid. I mean, I would not object to it if Wayne Tinkle said, you know what, you're done for the year, Reed. That's it. But
yeah,
I mean, I think he's got to really prove that he learned his lesson and that he really is apologetic for what he did. And that's why I think Tinkle came out with an at least four-game suspension, not just a straight four-game suspension.
Yeah.
But let's stick with the Pac-12 and go into actually some of the games and some of the teams here. And, Joby, is this the deepest conference in the country? Is this conference going to get the most bids? Because right now, I think out of 12 teams in the conference, you can make an argument for 11 out of 12 of them.
Yeah, you most certainly can. In my own personal analysis, I have 10 in. 10 right now. Now, that will change. People will have losing records in conference. People will fall back. But as far as a percentage, I think the most bids, for sure. There are other conferences, you know, for instance, maybe the ACC because they have 15 versus the 12 and things shake out wrong. But right now, the Pac-12 is angled for that. The only team I have out besides Wazoo is the Curtain of Distraction. Let lightning hit me for the love we give to them. But it's a great conference, and it's great at the top too. People want to say, "Oh, it's it's all wins." You know, they're all bunched together. I'm not so sure. I think some might be able to punch out.
But where is the top and the bottom of the conference this year? There is a lot of parity.
I think USC. I was calling USC out a long time ago. I was the only one to say not fraud. I'm just going to go down in record to say I was the only one to say not fraud. They're not a fraud. So is a loss to Monmouth the team we were talking about bad? I actually looked at USC's win over Monmouth, and that's a pretty darn good one.
Yeah, I mean, David, is USC the best team in this conference? Because right now, I think I'm kind of on Joby's bandwagon with this.
I think their paper currently is the best. I think they're one of the best. I still think Arizona, at full strength, is the better team. Well, we'll see. We're about not even a third of the way through conference play.
They won't be at full strength is my project. I can't disagree with that, but I don't see Arizona at full strength the remainder of the year.
Right. And you got to love this Colorado team. Not top of the conference, but certainly a lot better than what Chad thought.
They got lucky this week.
Yeah, we went into this is supposed to be my show, but Chad took it away.
All right, well, we want to talk about Colorado a little bit here, David. They did have a real nice week. They swept both Oregon schools at home.
Well, that's in all seriousness, that it's just that they were at home. Away from home, they've got three true wins, pretty good, but nothing real solid. Auburn, Colorado State, who's really limping right now. They did not look good, I didn't think, at California, but they did get the other big win at Stanford, who... Mm-hmm. Stanford's good at home. That's not an easy win to get. They went there and got it. They're going to be tested again this week on the Washington trip, at least the game at Washington Wazoo. They should walk all over them. I think that they're inside the bubble. I don't know how far up they really are. Eight, nine-ish range, but they're pretty good.
John, you've been high on this Washington team for a while now. You made some arguments for them last week in our bracket rundown. And this is the one team that I'm not that certain is for real versus a fraud. They may still be the fraud, but do you want to tell us why you like this Washington team so much?
Well, one reason is going to be that they have the one win so far in this conference against USC. And for many teams, USC is the gift that keeps on giving. And plus, let's not forget they also have wins against Texas off the mainland, and also UCLA, which could be a pretty decent win. I don't know how much stock I would put against wins against Washington State and Arizona State, but there's still road wins in the Pac-12, which is gold this year. Yeah, and they're going to have a big test this week when they get both USC and UCLA coming into – oh, wait, that's the Oregons. Never mind.
You know, no, they've got Colorado and Utah coming in this week for Washington. But Joby, to offset the Texas win and the USC win, Washington has lost a home game to UC Santa Barbara, and even worse, lost a home game to Oakland.
I thought Oakland – yeah, we did see what Oakland did against Michigan State. I
know Michigan State.
Valentine, but that's – you know, I'm starting to think the Valentine loss, they did just fine without him, besides the loss to Iowa. It lost to Iowa, which they proved it might be Iowa, not Michigan State. We'll get to that. Yes, Washington – I think Washington is a solid team to look at when we're deciding the final teams in the tournament. Right now I have them in, but that could change. They very well could be that team. Someone's got to lose these games. Not everybody's going to finish the season in the Pac-12 at 500. Someone's going to be sitting 2-4 games below 500. I think you saying Washington is a suspect for that is a strong one.
And if they're hosting Utah and Colorado this week, there's a decent chance they could be sitting on top of the conference at 6-1. Yeah. After the weekend.
That's the other thing about them. They are tough at home. I know that they have the two losses. Who did beat them at home? Oh, Oakland, and who was the other one? Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara.
Which, yeah. But, I mean, I think they've kicked it up in the gear, and it's not easy to go to Washington and win. Even when they're not a good team, it's not easy.
Well, the other team that I really want to mention, bring up here in the Pac-12 is a team that we really haven't mentioned much until this week. We kind of left them off at the beginning of the season. We thought they'd lost so much off of last year's NIT championship. But Stanford has been surprisingly good this year. And if I was going to do a bracket right now, I think that they're in. They've won at Oregon State. They've home wins over Utah and Cal. They have a neutral court win over Arkansas, who's at least a top 100 win. But they have no losses outside the top 50. And that's kind of the thing that I keep going to when I look at Stanford's profile is, wow, you're sitting here with the number 4 strength of schedule in the entire nation, only 6 losses, and they're all in the top 50 in the nation. And by the way, you have 3 top 50 wins.
Right. Not to the degree of Cincinnati, but if you look at some of their losses, it was games they really were in a position to win. You know, losing by 2 to Texas, losing by 1 to Colorado. You look at that, and they're about 5 points away and maybe 20 seconds away from being 11-4 and being not just in the field, but maybe to the point to where they're in on the first ballot if the season ended today. So,
yeah, so I'm just keeping an eye on the Stanford team. I think that the Stanford team is a lot better than I thought they were at the beginning of the season, a lot better than I thought they were going in. And I think they're a team that is going to move up in the Pac-12.
I will say this in regards to Stanford. I did make an argument last week for UCLA and Texas meriting at-large consideration because of their schedules. I mean, by that criteria, I would have to give Stanford some consideration, although they've only played 5 games total away from Maples Pavilion this year. They're 2-3, which is respectable, but they're still going to have some tests coming up in the bulk of the Pac-12.
Yeah. A team we really like, I just want to get somebody's opinion on Cal before we move on. This was Stanford's last win. It was a big rivalry game. Cal, just 1 win away from home. Is that problematic? Well, you can probably guess that I think it is, but I'm curious to see what you all think of their paper right now.
I think it's solid enough to be in, but they really had a shot, in my opinion, the way they started off Pac-12 play. At home, albeit, to make that run to be, hey, we're the elite. They could be where USC is right now. They haven't done that. Are they out? No, I think they're in the tournament right now. But they have to watch themselves. But everyone has to, because you don't want to be, as I said, that team that winds up with only 7 wins. There's only so many wins to go around. Likewise, what is good for all these, and this is the numbers guy talking right here, What I like about the Pac-12 and why I think they'll be have so many teams is what Chad mentioned. They're not going to be teams collecting a lot of over 50 losses. You lose to one of your conference mates, not name Washington State, it's not a loss outside the top 50 typically. And that will just build upon itself in the RPI and the computer projections. You're going to see a strengthening. We saw that in the Big 12 last year. You're going to see it in the Pac-12 this year.
And if you look at the strength of even the losses here, every team in the Pac-12 has a top 100 strength of schedule right now, and those numbers are only going to go up as you play each other.
Yeah.
Those are things that I think that the power rating numbers are going to be so strong for the Pac-12, we could be looking at an 8-bid league here. I don't know that it's going to be the 10 that we're looking at now, but I think we could be a solid 8 teams here.
Perhaps, yeah.
I want to bring up one other topic tonight that I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but I want to kind of try to bring this up with each of the major conferences and throw this out to all three of you here is, who do you feel has done the best coaching job at each of these conferences so far this year? Who would be your coach of the year so far? And in the Pac-12, David, go ahead.
I don't even have to think. Andy Enfield. It is amazing. I thought that he was just not cut out. They didn't appear to be going in the right direction prior to this year. They hadn't shown much signs of improvement, but my God, are they having a great year. He's a good coach. He did a fantastic job at Florida Gulf Coast, and he's doing a spectacular job this year. I think it's him, hands down.
Joby or John, do you want to disagree with that?
I agree with Enfield as the pick, but I want to give an honorable mention to Bobby Hurley for his amazing work on handling technical fouls.
John.
Yeah, I would also have to echo Enfield as number one, although since I've been championing Washington, I would also have to give Lorenzo Romar a close second at this point if he can keep Washington in contention.
I'll agree with you. If Washington stay up there contingent, I think they get he may get a little bit of a nod there. And, yeah. David, I hate to say this, but I kind of like the job that Tad Boyle has done in Colorado this year.
I've always been, I like Tad Boyle. Again, it doesn't look like they're going to land inside the bubble, but Wayne Tinkle at Oregon State has them moving in the right direction, and it's the first time that program has been moving in the right direction in over two decades. So I got to mention him as well.
Let's move on. Let's go over to the ACC, a little bit out of order from what I told you guys we were going to do today. But we just got done watching a heck of a game here where Duke, I think the stat was they've now, as a ranked team, Duke has lost three straight games to unranked teams for the first time since the 1960s. Joby, you're our ACC guy. What's wrong with Duke?
they're Kentucky from 3 years ago. They've got a lot of young talent. Grayson Allen's overrated. Let me just I'll get crucified for saying this, but in a lot of circles. But Grayson Allen is not Jones, Okafor, or Winslow. Get it through your heads. I don't care how many points he's scoring. He is not – he's a good player, but he is not J.J. Redick, okay? Let's just get that out there. They've got the talent, though. This team is going to wind up because they're going to be just barely above 500 in the ACC at the end of the day because they're going to lose games that they shouldn't, and we've seen that. And so I think at the end of the day you're going to see them in the tournament clearly wearing white, but it is a higher white seed, you know, set 6, 7, 8, and they could make a run to the Final Four because they have the talent to do so.
And we've seen that happen before, namely with the Kentucky team.
That's who I'm comparing it to.
Oh, that was just so bad when they beat Wichita State. I would have been such a happy puppet had Wichita held on to win that game.
But I think going back to Duke, I think we also have to mention that Emil Jefferson's injury, it may be a lot more impactful than we had initially recognized when this took place last month, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think that that's a factor there. But John, Syracuse gets the win now. Notre Dame beat Duke earlier this week. What do you think about both those teams? First of all, Notre Dame, we've been kind of waffling on them all season. Have they proven to you that they're a legitimate tournament team? And is Syracuse back in the discussion now also?
Those are both pretty hungry teams when you think about it because Notre Dame, I mean, they were starting to slide towards the bubble a little bit, and Syracuse, had fallen out of the bubble after getting off to a bad start during Boeheim's suspension. I mean, Syracuse started to get on track with the blowout win at Wake Forest, and this would be icing on top of that cake. And then there's Notre Dame, who had come off a loss at home against Pittsburgh, which started to put them in a desperate situation. But winning at Duke will cure a lot of sins.
Joby, you know we're coming to you with this. One of David's favorite stats is road wins. We got a team in the ACC here that was supposed to be a number one seed contender, is now 1-4 on the road. Another loss last night at Florida State.
And good at neutral sites, though. That's
yes, undefeated at neutral sites. 1-4 on true road games. Only the win at Ohio State when Ohio State was playing absolutely awful. What's
barely got it.
No, I mean, the road has not been kind to Virginia whatsoever. And one of the reasons why is it's what I've kind of mentioned in the past, the difference between this Virginia team and the other teams. Is that Virginia has a better offensive set right now than they've had the last few years, but their defense has taken a step back, probably two steps back. It's still a good defense, but it's not the ridiculous good defense that you've seen the last few years that led to number one and number two seeded teams in ACC regular season championships. The reason why they got those ACC regular season championships is because defense travels with you. Offense doesn't always. And except for Prentice, you can see it in Brogdon's shooting. Brogdon's shooting at home is pretty solid. On the road, it is just atrocious. And that's not – there's no excuse. That's not an excuse. That's just a reality. And because they don't have the defense to fall back on for maybe a key stop here, a key stop there, we saw it particularly against Virginia Tech, then that has led to losses. The losses haven't been awful-looking losses. In terms of the games themselves, but it's still unacceptable if you want to be a number one seed.
If you look at KenPom adjusted defensive ratings, Virginia's at 37, which is almost unheard of for them. And there's four teams better than them in the ACC right now.
I was just going to say, I'm a little surprised that they've struggled on the road. They went to George Washington early in the year, and although they didn't win the game, GW. It's really hard to beat at home. And Virginia, it was a game that they didn't win, but you felt like they should have won or they could have won, and that's probably the most you could hope for out of that. You know, playing West Virginia in Madison Square Garden and blowing them out, and you're just starting to think, okay, here they go. And then Virginia Tech, not as good as GW. Georgia Tech, not as good as GW. Losing both of those, again, they're not in any danger whatsoever of missing the field, although they'll have to win a road game at some point. But I'm a little surprised that they didn't get those, because those are some of the more winnable conference road games that they play.
Well, John, Virginia's next game is at home against Clemson, and this Clemson team has now run off five straight wins, sitting at 5-1 in the conference. Do we need to talk a little bit about the Tigers here?
Well, you're going to have to talk about them, considering they have the five wins against the ACC opponents. I mean, Louisville, Duke, Miami, and Florida State have all come into Greenville and come out with losses. And they also won at Syracuse while Boeheim is suspended. Clemson's only loss is at North Carolina, a place they have never won.
Ever. Ever.
The only thing that's really holding Clemson back at this point, losing on a neutral court to UMass, and also losing at Minnesota.
Yeah. They're entering a stretch to where four of their next five are on the road, and these wins are good. These wins are noteworthy. These wins are – we definitely have to sit up and look at them. If they are for real, they have to win a few of these. They have to win at Wake Forest, and they have to win at Virginia Tech, because – going to Virginia, going to Florida State, those are very tall orders, but they have got to get at least two of those. I think they got to get Wake and Virginia Tech to really feel safe, because they didn't really have a lot to fall back on out of conference either.
Well, Joby, we mentioned the Florida State, who did beat Virginia last night. Is this Florida State team now a tournament team?
Yeah, I think the Virginia win single-handedly right now push them from out of my field and into my field. And it was very simple. All of a sudden, you have to start looking. The Florida road win is no longer a fluke. You said, well, was that a fluke? You went, no. Now you got two top 25 wins that are nice to hang your hat on. They're a talented team. They've got the question inside. There are some questions inside for them, but they're out. Their perimeter, you know, is really starting to click and look good. They earned the win last night, fair and square, or 2 nights ago, fair and square.
And don't forget their win against VCU in Atlanta either.
Yeah. David, the other big question in the ACC is this North Carolina team. Playing pretty damn good so far. Undefeated, obviously, in conference play. They've actually run off, I think, 9 straight wins since the Texas game.
Yeah.
They also lost the game at Northern Iowa, which is still a head-scratcher for me. But yeah. Is this one good?
I could definitely see North Carolina getting up there. It took them a little bit to get their fitting on the road. But both their losses were – Northern Iowa is kind of a head-scratcher, but it was also a showcase – super bullish type game for Northern Iowa. They lost by 4. They didn't particularly play well. If you go on the road, don't play well, and only lose by 4, you're doing all right. Again, Texas only lost by 2. Those are the only two games they've lost this year. They win in the Florida State, who we just got done talking about, won decisively. Win in the Syracuse, who we also mentioned, won decisively. I think that they've shown they can prove on the road. They are also entering a stretch after they play at home against Wake Forest, a game they'll probably win easily, where they play 4 or 5 on the road. I wouldn't be surprised if they won all 5 of them.
Yeah, and Joby, I know you mentioned Marcus Page was out for the Northern Iowa game.
Yeah.
They still should have won the game, though.
Oh, they should. Well, yeah. Northern Iowa... Yeah, what's the deal? You go out and you beat two really protected seed level teams, and then you just barf all over yourself the rest of the season. I mean, it's like, hey, we beat Iowa State and North Carolina. We're in the tournament. I think they got too big for their britches, and it came up to bite Northern Iowa. Ironically, crazy.
I think I know what they'll be discussing at the team banquet at the end of the year.
Let's go back to the Coach of the Year discussion, and I think it might be a guy named Williams, but John, let me start with you. Who is your Coach of the Year so far in the ACC?
I know they've had kind of a rough week, but if you look at their overall body of work, I would still say Jim Larrañaga down at Miami, okay, because the Hurricanes have exceeded a lot of people's expectations. Winning at Virginia is not easy, and winning at Clemson has suddenly become rather difficult. You can't hold that against them.
Joby?
I think Brownell. I mean, I like what they've done at Clemson. These are legit wins. You know, I don't care if they're in Greenville. That's a neutral site for all practical purposes. It's not Little John. I could be proven wrong if all of a sudden they fall apart. But remember, Clemson was supposed to be competing with Boston College for the dreg spot. They're not. They are in the tournament discussion, and probably as of today, though they could easily slip out, as of today, probably in. Brownell.
Well, I mentioned Williams. I was actually kind of thinking nobody picked up on it, but maybe the job that Buzz Williams is spot
Buzz
tech.
Williams, yeah.
but David, your thoughts?
I would have to go with Larrañaga as well for basically all the reasons John said. They weren't expected to do much. They're really good, and even with the two losses back-to-back, they're still having a much better year than what most expected. He's done so well since getting there. He walked into a mess, and the thing about him is that he's won at places that had never really been successful before he got there, and in the case of George Mason, hasn't really been good since he left. I mean, Miami was a mess. They're never expected to do much, and I just think he's done a hell of a job there this year and through the whole course of his tenure there.
But I think going back to Virginia Tech, though, there's a side of me that wonders, is it cruel to bring Virginia Tech up to the bubble again around March? Because we are so used to seeing on one screen, who was it, Seth Greenberg, on the other side, bubbles burst, Virginia Tech. It had become almost an annual tradition.
Yeah, poor Seth. Let's move on to the Big Ten. We want to keep things rolling here.
You know what all those Votech teams had in common just before, just real quick? None of them actually belonged in. So the committee got every single one of them right.
Yeah, well, you end the season with a loss at Boston College, but it's any year. But the Big Ten, bad week for Michigan State. Got dismantled at home with by Iowa, then goes and loses at a Wisconsin team that couldn't seem to beat anybody this year. Joby, let me start with you. Did we overrate this Michigan State team when we were calling them one of the best teams in the country up until this past week?
Yeah, we probably did. Michigan State is who we thought they were. Except you, Chad, as I remember, they're still a tournament team. As I remember, you kept them out of your tournament.
I think I had they were on my bubble, but I think I may have actually had them out or in like
you had
the
them out. I remember that because I was just appalled because I think they're better than where I had them too. I had them about that 6-7 seed. I think they're a protected seed. Good. Are they a number one seed? Hell, if they go on a run, they have the ability to do it. But where they're not as deep as I think the depth was always a question. We saw it when Valentine was out a little bit. You know, Costello can only do so much by himself at that point. They don't have a ton of scoring options, but they're still a dang good team. And come March, you're probably going to see me putting them in my Final Four in my brackets.
Well, David, if Michigan State's not a one seed, we may actually still have a one seed here in the Big Ten. And you made the case for it last week during our bracket rundown. I think I wasn't ready to buy in that point, but I'm getting closer to ready to buy in your argument here. So I'm going to let you go ahead and make it again.
Well, let me preface this. And again, our committee guessing expert, John Titel, not with us tonight. Hopefully he'll be able to join us again in the near future. I don't think the real committee would give them a number one yet just because they don't really fit the demographics of losses to Notre Dame and Dayton on a neutral floor aren't bad losses by any means. But typically, one seeds don't lose at home, and one seeds don't lose neutral games to unprotected seeds.
We're talking about Iowa, of course, here.
Yeah, and again, yeah, this is Iowa. So you could make a case that they're not a categorical one seed. But outside of that, coming very close to beating Iowa State, the wins at Michigan State, who is a protected seed, winning both of those, going at Purdue and winning, that is just an amazing – that is one seed level stuff. They're the only team that's won at Purdue. They're the only team that's won at Michigan State. And outside of Wisconsin, they're the only team that's beaten Michigan State at all. Those are three really, really solid wins. They're in first place in the Big Ten. And it's rare that you see it, but sometimes you do see a team that lost a game to a team outside the tournament or outside the protected seed range end up with the one. We saw it with Virginia a few years ago. I think Iowa will have to go for the double to get it. But if they do that, I think they are a one seed.
Well, you know what? I mean, Iowa still has a home game with Purdue, a game at Maryland, a game at Indiana, a game at Michigan. They've got so many more quality wins that they can pick up here. Not that they're going to win every one of those, but I don't necessarily think they have to go for the double. Their losses, Dayton may end up being a protected seed if they can keep winning. Their numbers are good there. Iowa State may end up being a protected seed.
Well, Iowa State doesn't hurt.
Going to be solidly in the field. I'm kind of on board with you, and I think that I may be liking them better than you are right now, honestly.
Yeah, well, I have them on the one line. I just can't get them off. I don't know if the real committee would have them up there just yet. Iowa State, if you lose – if you are a number one seed, the games that you're allowed to lose, and you can't lose them all, but you can lose one or two of them, are road games against protected seeds. So I don't think the Iowa State loss will hurt them that much, but losing on a neutral floor to teams that aren't protected seeds more than once, you don't often see that. But still, I mean, well, you do see it on occasion, Virginia a couple of years ago.
Yeah. But Virginia was on a roll after December 31st that was outright. Yeah. You know, they went 16-2 in the conference.
Weren't we just talking about North Carolina as a potential one seed? They've lost this to Texas and Northern Iowa. Yeah. Neither of those could be a protected seed.
Right.
And especially this year where we don't have a dominant team, I think you could have two losses to non-protected seeds.
Yeah.
But if it's not Iowa, John, how about Maryland? Are they one seed good?
Well, their talent is one seed good, but their paper is more along the lines of a four or five seed, so the committee is going to have, at this point, a difficult time trying to place a team like the Terps. They lost to Michigan this week, and this is without Caris LeVert, but they came back home to the Beltway and blasted Ohio State, which is also a concerning sign for the Buckeyes, who have been blasted on the road by two of the Big Ten's better teams.
Yeah. Oh.
Maryland just frustrates me. Quiz, how many of you have them having beaten one team in your field? One. Just one.
I'll say
UConn wins the American because I think they're out otherwise.
I was going to say UConn.
I was thinking about putting St. Francis PA in as my Northeast Conference champion, actually.
I mean, the fact is, Maryland's paper is not just, oh, it's inadequate. We rag on, like, Louisville's paper and some of these other teams who, you know, it's awful. It's awful.
By one seed standards, it's awful.
They're in the field. I'm not arguing they're not in the field. And I'm
don't
not even
Princeton.
Like, but I am going to argue they might not be worthy of a protected seed. I will go that far.
Well, we're going to find out a lot about Maryland here. Saturday night, they're at Michigan State, a huge game.
They have a chance to earn it. I'm saying as of right now. They have a chance to earn it because they play in the Big Ten.
Iowa at home coming up next week. They've got a trip to Indiana coming up still, and huge game. We circled this one last week, February 9th. They're hosting Bowie State. So
Bowie State. Why? You don't play a game like that in the middle of conference play.
You don't play a game like that any time of the season if you want to be a
Washington. What's the story? You know what I say about if you want to play D2 teams, you know what you should do? You should reclassify. I hate that. There's rare circumstances. If Hawaii wants to play Chaminade, great. What LaSalle did earlier in the year, I thought that was great. But for the most part, what's the point? Don't even do it.
let's move on to the Coach of the Year discussion here in the Big Ten. And, Joby, let me start with you this time around. Is there somebody that you're looking at here that
I don't know how you go with anybody but McCaffrey.
I'd like to make the case for Tim Miles.
Okay, now we know, David, you go with Tim Miles. John, do you have a tiebreaker here between McCaffrey and Miles?
Miles, they've won three in a row.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with McCaffrey possibly winning a conference title in his fourth conference if you count Lehigh and the Patriot, UNC Greensboro, and I think it's the Southern Conference, and also Siena and the Metro Atlantic.
Nebraska's won three games in a row.
Let me just throw this out here, and I may get attacked for saying this by the fans of this team, but after a 5-3 start, they've now won 10 straight games, 5-0 in conference. Tom Crean in Indiana has really hurt them well.
You know I was kidding when I said Tim Miles, but you're actually being serious. Mr. Crean, the defensive guru. If you want to know how to play defense, watch Indiana and do the opposite.
Well, obviously they did something right because they have won 10 straight games, though, Joby.
Yeah, but let me tell you also something Indiana has done to get to that record. They've beaten Rutgers on the road. They've beaten Minnesota on the road. And I think they also beat Nebraska on the road, if I'm not mistaken.
They beat Notre Dame, which means they've beaten one more team in the field than Maryland.
Yes.
I was not very serious, honestly, about Tom Crean, but I knew it would get a rise out of you
their
guys.
Schedule is... It's kind of backloaded here. Like, they're kind of going to the pastry cart earlier, but, you know, going to Michigan State, to Iowa, Maryland at home, Iowa. The second half is going to get – they're going to have to lift a lot more weight than what they've been lifting to keep that up.
We've been discussing one seeds. Let's keep moving here. And, John, I'm going to move over to your conference now. And the question here is, which team is better, or are they just both one seeds for what you've seen so far? And that's Villanova and Xavier in the Big East.
Well, I think at the moment they're both number one seeds, but until someone takes them down, I don't know how you can go with anyone else but Villanova in the Big East right now.
Is that more because they did it last year that you're kind of saying that?
Well, they've done it really the last 2 years, if you go by the regular season. I mean, 2 years ago, I'm still trying to figure out how Seton Hall was able to knock off Villanova in the Big East tournament. With multiple teams like Providence, Xavier, and Butler have been unable to crack the code on Villanova. That's a sign of a powerhouse right there.
I'm going to make an argument that's impossible to make, but it's one of those that I feel anyway. I know Nova beat them by 30-plus. I still think Xavier has the better team. Nova is really, really strong at home. They shoot the ball real well from the outside, and they particularly shoot it well at the pavilion. Xavier was kind of down a man. Now, they lost by over 30, so they probably don't win even at full strength. They probably still get blown out at full strength, honestly. But I really just am – for Xavier, Xavier has won 16 games, and I think all were by double digits. They blasted Alabama. They blasted USC. They had a lead of over 27 points in the second half. They blasted Dayton. None of those games were at home. They were down 18 to Wake Forest in the second half, I believe, and ended up outscoring them by 26 points in the second half. They have been amazingly good. And then they beat Marquette, who isn't great, but they still beat them handily. Excuse me, they only beat Marquette by 8. That was not a double-digit win. That shoots my entire argument down.
Okay, well, then you're done. They also only beat St. John's by 8 points, so, yeah.
Oh, but, well.
Has anyone also noticed another trend that we've been bringing up a lot of games from the Advocare tournament in Orlando this year?
Yeah.
Dayton for the championship there. Monmouth beats USC for third place. Alabama beats Notre Dame for fifth place. And Iowa beats Wichita State for seventh. That is incredible.
Eight teams in that field that all look like NCAA tournament teams and some like really high seeds. It's amazing.
Yeah, we say this every year, but just as a reminder, the fact that Iowa and Wichita was a seventh place game does not matter to the committee. There's no asterisk. Yeah. It's not valued any less. All it is a neutral floor game between two teams. Would you agree with that?
As it should be.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the Big East here. I just want to mention a few games coming up. We're going to find out a lot more about Villanova this week at Seton Hall and then hosting Providence. Xavier also hosting Seton Hall this weekend. The Providence team, before they go to Villanova on Saturday, host Butler tomorrow night, though. And Joby, is this Providence team heading in the wrong direction right now?
They're heading in the wrong direction right now, but they're a solid team. I mean, teams ebb and flow. I mean, this is just one of those deals. I think this Providence team is good enough to, quote-unquote, right the ship, and they're a solid tournament team. They've shown it so far. They've got an outstanding Big East player of the year, probably.
When you've got to play Villanova and Xavier twice in conference, you can't lose at home to Marquette and Seton Hall, can you?
Yeah, well, Seton Hall, though, let's see if they can win on the road. there's a little bit of that. But Seton Hall, I like Seton Hall as a team. You know, so it's not like I'm just devastated. Marquette, they're on the wrong side of the bubble by a long way right now, in my opinion. But
Let's go to the Coach of the Year discussion here at the Big East. And John, I'm going to start with you, and you're going to like this because personally, I think Chris Mack is the guy. But
yeah,
do you agree?
Are you talking about Xavier, or are you talking about his daughter's team? And I think it's fifth grade at Blessed Sacrament at Northern Kentucky.
Both of them. Go ahead, John.
No, you would find me hard pressed to argue against Chris Mack, and that's not just the homer in me, but let's not forget the good job that Ed Cooley has also done, because it's not just a one-man show that they have with Chris Dunn, because they also won, I think, one or two games without him in the lineup due to illness.
Yeah, David, do you agree?
I like a lot of coaches in this league. I would have to go with Chris Mack as well. I just think he's really, really got Xavier rolling, and I after what I said about them earlier, I'm not going to say it's anybody else, but there have been some amazing coaching jobs. I think Chris Holtman, while struggling this year, has done a very good job at Butler. He walked into a really difficult situation. Ed Cooley, who John just mentioned, and by no means is he the coach of the year in the conference, but I will say he's done much better than I thought he would, and that's Wojciechowski at Marquette.
Yeah, Wojciechowski. Yeah.
Joby, where are you on the coach?
Max, the choice. I mean, when we're talking about two, you know, I'm debating on my own bracket five teams for number one seeds, and two of them are the two that you mentioned, Xavier and Villanova. Jay Wright, sorry, you're always there, so you don't
have to give Coach of the Year to somebody that just does the same thing he does every year, which is
exactly
so in the conference of being number one seed.
It's kind of like Roy Williams when you threw out the Williams thing in the ACC. Oh, sorry, Roy, your team's always there, so you don't get the credit for being such a good coach, sort of thing.
Right.
Let's take a look over the Big 12 next, though. As we're recording this, Oklahoma struggling at Iowa State. There's still about 16 minutes left of that game, though. But West Virginia, I think, is a team we really want to discuss here in the Big 12. And, David, let me start with you here. They beat the number one, what was the number one team in the nation, and almost beat the number two team in the nation in back-to-back games this past week.
Yeah, I was really impressed. I was expecting them to beat Kansas just because it is such a snake pit at West Virginia. I made some tweets commenting about how there was no people there at the start of the game because the game started, the arena wasn't full, and I was a guest. I didn't realize that there was such severe weather. So, you know, by the end of the game, the arena was full, and I'm sure that they're glad that they went. But for them, I was actually more impressed with the game that they didn't win, and that was going to Oklahoma and playing just absolutely lights out. They had a chance to win that one. It was a really, really impressive showing. And again, other than the loss to Virginia, who beat them rather handily, they've been amazingly good this year. And they were really good in that game for the first 16 minutes or so.
And remember what happened in the Virginia-West Virginia game. Huggy pulled his point guard who made a bad pass and just sat him for the final half of the game as a point. Basically, he said, I don't care. It was a little bit of a, I don't care about this game. This is about building for the future, and it was a pretty impressive play, as we've seen after the fact, with the only loss being a game that barely slipped away with you in the Noble Center in Norman.
John, this Baylor team has finally started to pick up some road wins, which was a huge hole in their resume. Has this team turned a corner, in your opinion?
Yeah, this seems to be their MO, get a win at Iowa State where no one else seems to have won over the past 2 to 3 years. And they also get a nice buzzer beater shot at Texas Tech, who is also in some dire straits of their own. But as far as the Red Raiders, at least they get a much needed road win tonight at TCU. But getting back to Baylor, I think they're also protected seed caliber at this point as our four other teams in the Big 12.
I was really, really, I mean, I had written them off as just beating up on a pastry cart at home, sweating out Vanderbilt, who has proven to be not good at all, getting blasted at Texas A&M, getting blasted at Kansas. I don't know if there's any team that has improved more over a week's time than Baylor did last week. Those were monster road wins.
A few upcoming games here. Actually, Texas we didn't discuss yet, but they are starting to, I guess, get a little bit better here. They're playing at West Virginia and at Kansas this week. I think we're going to find out a lot about this Texas team. Also, look for Oklahoma Baylor coming up on Saturday. Sorry, David.
I was going to say, if they win both of those, they'll be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they will be. But let's go to the Coach of the Year discussion here in the Big 12. David, let me start with you.
I got to go with Bob Huggins. I think
you stole mine.
I was going to say, I think it's a two-person battle here between him and Lon Kruger over there.
Kruger is the other one.
But again, West Virginia playing extraordinarily well right now.
John, do you want to make the argument for Bruce Weber or no?
I don't know if we're allowed to split our vote here, but I think I would go with Kruger and Huggins as a combo. I mean, Kruger, I guess, on some levels was kind of expected, but we weren't expecting West Virginia to be a protected seed quality team this year, at least.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on quickly to the SEC, where one of the most shocking losses of the weekend was Kentucky, who had been cruising over Auburn to the point that I had turned off the game. I'd gone to do something else and came back and saw a final score, and Kentucky lost at Auburn. David, is Kentucky even more overrated than we even thought they were last week when we called them overrated?
I think so. To date, they only have one true road win. They did have the neutral floor win against Duke, but how valuable is that all of a sudden? Losing... I was actually still more flummoxed by how badly they lost at LSU than I was that they barely lost at Auburn. I think that they're a home court hero. Like they leave Rupp Arena and they struggle. And we're not talking about losing to tournament caliber teams. We're talking about losing to LSU and Auburn. They had a nice win at Alabama. In fact, they had a real nice win. It was a decisive win there. But I don't know what happened. Again, they were in control of the game. They weren't blowing Auburn out, but they had them at arm's length. But as momentum built, which will happen, like when you're the underdog and you're at home, it's easy to get momentum built and it's easy to get the crowd into it. Kentucky was not able to quash it. And they just, a real nice win for Auburn. It's not going to get them to the tournament at all, but it's one of those feel-good significant moments for a program that's trying to build itself.
Joby, another team that I think is maybe the getting the least national credit for what they've been doing this year is this Texas A&M team. Unbelievable what they did at Georgia, 79-45 this weekend.
I mean, where did this come from? I ragged on you for the whole Michigan State, keep him out. I had A&M as one of my first teams out of the tournament preseason. I was wrong. They are good. If you look at the inconsistencies that have been just discussed about Kentucky, because there will be more LSU and Auburn-type games. There will, because of just their youth, their inconsistencies with point throws, et cetera. You're going to see more of that. Kentucky equals Duke. Same conversation for both teams. Texas A&M, they're real. They remind me a lot of what we saw out of the Virginia teams over the last few years, to be honest. Well,
you look at this team, they've got four senior starters, and that's a rare thing in a power conference these days. John, I want to also bring in here on the South Carolina team. They finally lost a game. Is it time to start actually looking at their resume and realizing there's no meat on it?
Well, again, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The SEC will give South Carolina a few opportunities at the top of the conference. I mean, teams like Texas A&M and Florida are going to be a little better inspected, but when teams like Kentucky and LSU are worse than we thought, then it's kind of a mixed bag, and that was against an Alabama team that was pretty desperate themselves after getting waxed at home by Kentucky. But I wouldn't bet against Angry Frank, though.
Two big games for them coming up. Ole Miss and Tennessee. Neither tournament teams, but both very good at home this year. If they can get one or both of those, I think the committee will give them some credit.
Let's turn to the Coach of the Year discussion here in the SEC then. And, John, let me start with you. Who would you go with?
The SEC, I think I probably would have to go with who is it at Texas A&M? Is it Billy Gillespie?
Billy Kennedy.
Billy Kennedy. Billy Gillespie. I can tell you something right there, just how under the radar that A&M has been this year. Can't even keep their coaches straight.
David, do you want to make the Frank Martin argument, or are you going to go with Billy Kennedy too?
But, I mean, how do you not go with our man, Angry Frank? What a guy.
Joby, your thoughts?
Kennedy, it's just such a shame because everybody had Kevin Stallings in this preseason. it was like he was built to be coach of the year. Everybody was pointing there. And, how things have changed.
I could have sworn I saw a picture of Frank Martin smiling there. Is that right?
Seriously, Doug, he must have been drunk.
Let's quickly run through some of these other conferences that we do like to discuss on the show. First of all, in the American, Dave, this question is really for you.
Yeah.
SMU, which I know you love to talk about because they're ineligible,
is
the only undefeated team in the country. It has a chance to be the first team since that 75-76 Indiana squad to go undefeated. albeit the fact that they can't play any postseason play. You know, I mean, we had plenty of teams that have gone the same undefeated up to conference tournament play in the last few years.
I take back.
What do you do with that historically, though? What do you do if SMU goes undefeated?
I take back what I said back in October during those preseason podcasts. On the second thought, go ahead and appeal it. try and get some sort of waiver. Say you'll take it later. It's all the best team in the league by far. The only team that is solidly in a position to wear a white and maybe even be in a protected seed and maybe better than that is not eligible. This conference has been hugely disappointing. UConn, albeit they won against Houston, and that's a nice road win for them.
For them, it is.
Might be able to land inside the bubble. Cincinnati has looked good at times, but they have lost to Temple twice. They have another loss, like barely beating South Florida, I think it was. Was it South Florida? Whoever it was.
South Florida. Yeah,
somebody terrible. I mean, when you are losing multiple games to non-tournament teams at home, and I know they won the South Florida game, but it was by 3 points, that is a problem.
And you see the other loss was at SMU that you were stumbling on.
John, do you think Cincinnati is a tournament team right now? Because quite frankly, I don't.
Right now, I would have them as my first team out, but yeah. They're going to be one of the teams that's never pleasant to play. But when you've gone through, what is it, 4 or 5 games that have gone down to the buzzer and have found a way to lose, that has got to be excruciating on their fan base, which is already restless on the football side from Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah, they have got to thunder down the stretch. I mean, they have got to beat Memphis. They got to win their next two, which should be slam dunks, but the way they've been playing, you don't know. And I think they got to go to UConn and win.
Yeah. Let's search the mountain.
Cincinnati's big thing everybody was hanging on to was, oh, you beat a good GW team. You got to be a good GW team. Segway.
Yeah. Let's do that as a segue. Joby, let me stick right with you. GW loss at Dayton. The bad losses at DePaul, the bad loss at St. Louis. Is this team in trouble now?
Yeah, they need to be – if you're going to have – hey, you got the Virginia win. Good for you. Virginia doesn't look like the number one seed they once were. Still a good seed team, but not a number one seed. The fact of the matter is – if you're going to lose to St. Louis, if you're going to lose to DePaul, if you're going to lose these games, you have to beat Dayton then. You can play that. If you're playing with fire, well, hell, yeah, you're going to get burned. And I think they got burned. And right, can they climb back out of it? Sure, there's enough there to maybe climb out, but they can't slip up again. And right now they're out. They can play their way back in, but they're out right now.
David, how about the rest of the A-10? VCU, St. Joe's, do you think either of these teams get in?
I do. I think VCU gets in. Their paper is not there yet. They really were sluggish through a period in December. I think they lost 3 games in a row, but they have not lost since. I think they're going to finish in first place. I think that they're going to go to Davidson and win. I think they're going to... They closed the season at Dayton. That is a hugely important game. They also go to GW. Now, Joby just said GW was out, but let's clarify that. Even though GW might be out, they're still really, really tough to beat at home, and the committee's going to see that and give them credit for it. I think they're going to add more meat to their resume between now and the end. I think they're playing fantastically good. Richmond, a team that's been an Achilles heel, a rival of theirs for years, especially the last couple years, they went in there and they got the win. And Richmond is not a tournament team, but Richmond is tough to beat at home. I really like the way VCU is playing. I think they get in.
I'll say another thing about VCU right here. Their 5 wins in the Atlantic 10 are quite a bit stronger than what Indiana has accomplished in the Big Ten. I mean, winning at St. Joe's, winning at Richmond, those are difficult environments.
Yeah, winning at St. Louis, GW can't do that. But, John, let me stick with you for a second here. The Mountain West, we probably had the most important game of the season so far in the Mountain West, although not many people talked about it, but San Diego State won at Boise State. And the question I have for you is, has San Diego State turned the corner, and are they back, and are they going to win this conference now?
Yeah, one of the things that we haven't really discussed that much about San Diego State over the past couple weeks was they were, I guess, rumblings of an investigation going on over the summer, only to find out they've finally been exonerated. So
yeah, they were never really there either, Gary Parrish, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Aztecs are playing right now like they don't have a two-ton gorilla hovering above their shoulders right now and winning at Boise State. That still doesn't put them above the bubble, but it certainly puts them at the top of the Mountain West discussion right now.
Yeah, another thing about this league, and Joby being our power ratings guy, there are 11 teams in this conference, and nine out of the 11 are in the RPI top 200.
Well, Colorado State's actually exactly 200, so we're barely making that.
Yeah. What wow. A pitiful league. Two top 100 teams, none inside the bubble. I think the conference tournament will crown the only team that this – I just don't see anybody.
The loss of Boise to San Diego State actually did more harm to the conference because Boise State kind of made that run, beating the San Diego States of the world as they go. Then maybe if they slip up in their tournament, you know, they could get that at large. But now it's getting.
I think if San Diego State or Boise State from here on out could literally win every single game till the conference tournament final, and I don't think either of those teams is going to do that. But if it did happen, they're going to get a look. But beyond that, it's a one-bid league.
If for whatever reason they can find their way into the first four, they'll probably have their own hotel rooms in Dayton waiting for Boise State because they've suddenly become regulars in the first four.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit Gonzaga here also. David, the Zags lose at home this week to BYU. BYU then goes and loses at Portland. So, you know, to the extent for half a second we were looking at BYU's resume, we stopped doing that. We want to talk about teams that have not beaten anybody in the field. Washington's their best win, then UConn, and that's pretty much it. Why is Gonzaga so solidly in everybody's field right now?
I don't know. I don't really pay attention. I know that a lot of these bracketologists do things kind of categorically. Gonzaga is in the rankings. They do have a brand name. Categorically speaking, if you're in the rankings, you're in the field, although not always, but usually. It's week. We were joking around about how the game that was canceled really hurt Pitt. I think it actually hurt Gonzaga more. They could have really used a win like that on their profile. They're pitiful. Now, they blasted San Diego, but San Diego is awful.
They're at St. Mary's Thursday night, which is a huge game, too. So it's
They need it. They really need it.
And this is where I was going to jump in, right? Go ahead, Joby.
No, I was just saying, the winner of the St. Mary's Gonzaga game, they got a shot at large with the losers. And if it's St. Mary's, they're very much in trouble. Gonzaga, for the reasons given about the rankings, name on the jersey, ironically, I think actually helps them, but which is a shame. But neither of these teams really have earned it today.
I keep forgetting about this game. I got their schedule up. They do go to SMU in February, sort of an unusual out-of-conference game there. But so they do have a chance to get a statement win, but the way things are going, not only do they not win that one, I think SMU runs them out of the building.
They have a chance, but I want to add on to Joby's points. When Gonzaga goes to St. Mary's, I honestly think the winner of this game would be in my field because after Thursday, I don't see how Gonzaga or St. Mary's can really have an at-large case on their own.
Well, one other team I wanted to bring up here is in the Missouri Valley, Wichita State. Not sitting there with a great overall record, but there's when I look at their profile here, I'm seeing asterisks next to the USC, Alabama, and Iowa losses. Maybe it's because it's a neutral court game, or maybe it's because Fred VanVleet wasn't there. But what do you do with this Wichita State profile right now if you're on the committee? They do have the home win over Utah, but that's pretty much it. But on the other hand, they don't have the – I mean, they have a loss at Tulsa and the three losses without VanVleet. David, what are your thoughts on this Wichita State team?
Well, I think you got to give them some credit for winning at Southern Illinois just because of how well Southern Illinois played at home and they blasted them. I do think you have to look at those losses and realize, well, all those are tournament caliber teams. Iowa is extremely good. USC, we just talked about how they were the best team in the Pac-12. So do you really punish them even if they had Van Fleet? But you punish them even less, I think, because they didn't. So I still think that there's room for them in the field. Now, they will have to blow through this conference, which they've been doing. Evansville made them sweat a little bit, but no one else really has. They go to Northern Iowa, which may prove to be difficult, but I think you take them. I mean, I had them in my bracket today, and I think we had them in, or did we, last week when we did the mock committee.
Well, we've had them in as the automatic bid winners so far. They are the best team in the conference. The question really here is, Joby, here is, should Evansville or somebody else win the MVC tournament, do they still get in?
I think they do, depending who they lose to. I mean, if they lose to Bradley, that could be really costly. you laugh, but it's true. Losing to a 200-plus team is a lot more costly than losing to Evansville. I mean, Evansville is a solid team. They're not in the field, you know, but Evansville is a true NIT team. And that's the difference for me.
And you look at that, I mean, I think about a month ago, we were looking at Wichita to say, well, the worst thing they did is they finished in eighth place in that tournament. But as John mentioned earlier, seven teams that were also in that tournament are all really good teams. So one of them had to finish eighth.
How badly would Wichita State and Evansville want to have Creighton back in their conference right now? You want to talk about long-lost rivalries?
Yeah.
Wichita State and Creighton was very bitter towards the end of the Blue Jays in the Missouri Valley.
I think they'd rather have Kansas and Missouri back into the conference, but that's going way back in time. But
about a century.
Yeah.
That does run through all the conferences here. Let me run through each of you, though, if you have any other final thoughts or other teams you want to comment on. Joby, we'll start with you.
Well, I'll follow up on something that David was hitting on. Poor SMU. Why didn't you just – this shows you don't have the forethought. Look to your brethren in Chapel Hill. That's the playbook. That's the playbook. What happened in North Carolina is just if what's been accused is real, it's at the very core of what a student athlete and academic standards and what a program is. It's not just paying some guy. You could have found an appeal. You could have waited it out, and instead – you had your chance and you blew it.
David, your thoughts?
Well, I thought the show got off to the best start it's ever had, and then you took it away. So that I got nothing on top of that. I try to bring the people a great show, and it gets taken away.
John, I'll turn it over to you. Any final thoughts or anything else you want to comment on?
I know we're about a month and a half away, but, I mean, if we're going to be talking about conference tournaments coming up in March, could the Pac-12 tournament be the tournament to watch this year, just from a parity standpoint? Usually we talk about tournaments like the ACC, the Big 12, the new Big East, but I submit to you the Pac-12 is going to be about as wide open as any conference can be this season.
What happens in Vegas will not stay in Vegas on that one.
Right.
Yeah, now I got to tell you that you mean the 8-9, the 7-10, heck, even the 6-11 game in the first round of the Pac-12 could be games to decide a tournament spot. I think you're right from what we're seeing so far. That may be the best tournament, although the ACC will be close, although for some reason Boston College is going to get invited to that tournament.
Right. Oh, which brings up another final thought that I wanted to get to. We'll talk more about this, but the SEC, with Missouri being out, needs to do what's appropriate and play the quintuple header.
My final thought is actually two of them. First of all, we've been talking a lot about Sun Belt teams. Texas are kind of an under-the-radar point here. Texas Arlington lost during the week. Arkansas Little Rock just lost tonight at Arkansas State. Tough week for the Sun Belt. The other thought, though, heading back to our point about coaches of the year, we didn't actually discuss them in the American or the A-10 or the Mountain West. But in the American Conference, I really think the team, the coach who led his team to undefeated season so far, should be coach of the year. Of course, I'm talking about Tim Jankovic over at SMU.
Jankovic done a fantastic job.
9-0, great job by him. Larry Brown coming in for the lousy games against American teams. But on that note, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.